are listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Wednesday, March 24th. We are in the middle of spring practice. We are 2 days away from Ja'Quarri Brown's announcement. I am joined by my co-host and producer, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how's your week going? How are we feeling?
Not too bad, dude. Not too bad. So it's good week.
How's life out in Utah?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Tonight, I've actually scored box seats to the Jazz Nets game.
Wow, Mr. Fancy.
I know, right? That's the one of the few perks of what I do for a living is, you know, that occasionally people will offer us tickets to stuff like this. So
box seats, that's great. Oh, wow.
The Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, are you kidding me?
I know, man. It's like the marquee game of the year.
How have the Jazz been doing lately?
So they were kind of in free fall around the All-Star break and just after, but they've picked it back up. I think they've won two consecutive games by over 10 points again. So,
okay. All right. I wish I had better words to describe the Heat right now.
Yeah. Well, dude, I was watching the Heat versus Suns last night.
Oh my God.
The Suns are right on the Jazz tail.
Bro, they're good.
They are good.
They're no joke.
I was really hoping the Heat could help me out last night, but didn't happen.
Yeah, we are in a free fall. We've lost four in a row. I don't know what the hell is happening. I'm literally refreshing Twitter, like just waiting for a trade announcement, like it's recruiting season. But
yep,
I don't know, man.
What do you think about the Kyle Lowry trade? Like the possibility of a Kyle Lowry trade for the Heat?
You know, it's. I'd rather get like Oladipo and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Okay.
Honestly, but yeah. Lowry, I didn't know he was 34.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. But
Oladipo
I guess Lowry's still playing at a high level, so it depends on what we give up for Lowry. Like I wouldn't give up Hero for Lowry.
I get you. I can see like the Oladipo would be a lot less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I kind of worry about Oladipo.
Yeah, I think as like a number three option, he would do well.
Yep.
Honestly, but we just need someone else to score besides Jimmy and Bam, and half the time Bam doesn't even score. And
yeah, dude, I tried to warn Heat fans that the Jay Crowder for Avery Bradley swap, you know, I mean, they let Jay Crowder walk and brought in Avery Bradley and Mo Harkless. and I tried to warn you guys, man, that was bad.
Bro, I told people, like, when we didn't re-sign Jay Crowder, I'm like, this is going to be a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jay Crowder is one of my favorite players in the NBA.
Yeah, and he's not a guy that you can, like, count on to have a big scoring night, but I feel like he's a reliable 12 points, you know, hard-nosed defense, that kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. He's everywhere he goes, the teams are good, and I don't think that's a coincidence. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he went to Phoenix and now they're number 2 in the West.
Good on defense and he's a veteran, and so I love Jay Crowder when like he was playing with the Jazz. And yep. like that, I was interning for a radio station in Utah, and so we had to go cover the Jazz. And I was like, I remember I had to interview Jay Crowder one time, and it was horrifying.
Yeah,
he's a scary dude.
Yeah, I met him at like a season ticket holder event, and you know, I think it was shortly after we traded for him. And
okay.
I was like, dude, we're pumped to have you here, and he's like, yeah, man, I love being here in Utah. Like, you know, I mean, he was just super cool about it. So.
Cool dude. Okay. But yeah, that my sports life right now is we're in like the Heat suck right now.
Yeah.
And it's not football season and it's not baseball season yet. So
yeah.
It's very boring, honestly. Because honestly, it's spring practice and I know we're all really excited, but the fact that the media can't be there and we have to just like take notes off of these interviews and literally practice clips from the Canes Twitter account. Like, it's not as great. Like, I feel like we don't really, really know what's going on. And so that's kind of hard, but I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I get you. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. But I don't know. But yeah, the Canes are still practicing. I'm trying to think if there's like some big news that's been going on lately. Tyler Van Dyke is still playing really well. Keyshawn Smith is still, I'm hearing great things about Keyshawn Smith. And also Mike Harley, my boy, is playing really, really well right now. Does that come as a surprise to you?
No, it doesn't. I mean, we both kind of expected Mike Harley to, you know, to be like wide receiver one this year, you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you know that he is 50 receptions and 900 yards away from being Miami's all-time leading receiver?
So I didn't know that until our friend, Endo Gaines pointed that out on Twitter. That's crazy, man. He could legit make a run at that number one spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you were a betting man, I think he gets the 50 catches, but I don't know if he gets the 900 yards.
Agreed. I was going to say that same thing. I think he'll probably have closer to 700 yards, but I bet he gets very close, if not passes that 50 reception mark.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely got to get 50 receptions. I think he definitely had that over that last year, but 900 yards for a Miami Hurricanes receiver. I don't know when the last time that happened.
Yeah, it would be interesting to look up. Wasn't there a guy that had, I want to say that Perryman got, or sorry, who was the first round pick that's really fast, played for the Patriots?
Philip Dorsett.
Yep. I want to say that Dorsett got really close his last year, but I could be wrong there. Want me to look that up?
Yeah, sure. I mean, even so, like, when was his last year? 2014?
Yeah, and that's still a while ago, you know? It's,
yeah.
Time's a flying, Marsh.
Yeah. And we haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since then.
Yep.
That's ridiculous. That's unbelievable. That gets me really, really angry. And then when was the last time we had a 1,000, or I guess Mark Walton was a 1,000-yard rusher in 2016, but still.
So Dorsett's last year, he had 36 catches, 871 yards.
Wow.
Yep.
That's not a lot of catches, but that's a lot of yards.
Yeah, his sophomore year, he had 58 catches and 842 yards. So. Interesting.
You know what's interesting is that he was a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, man, I remember that draft. Like, because one of my buddies was an Eagles fan, and they were trying to draft a wide receiver that year. And, you know, after Dorsett ran, what, like a 4.31 or whatever in the combine, you know, he, like, started rocketing up draft boards. And my buddy hit me up and was like, dude, is Dorsett, like, a legit first-round guy? And, you know, I just couldn't lie about it. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, he's really good if you want him to run a straight line. If you need him to catch a football, it complicates things. If you need him to change direction, it really complicates things. But yeah,
like, he was a first round pick, and like, yeah, he's had a I guess okay NFL career, but man,
yeah, that's I'm not much of a guy for the combine heroes for that reason.
Yeah, I'm not either. Like, I will say this. I think Jalen Phillips is going to have an incredible combine.
Yes, but, I mean, he had an incredible season, though, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, when you're a combine hero, but your college production doesn't match those numbers,
yep,
then I think you gotta...
I'm not a guy where it's like I'm giving somebody a fifth round grade and then they have a great combine and then they're in my first round.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would probably move them up like two rounds rather than a few, you know?
Mm-hmm. That type of thing. Ugh. And you know what's really sad is that guys like Amon Richards should have been a first rounder.
Oh, yeah. He was a lock for a first round, honestly.
He was so good. He was so good.
I'd bet the naming rights to my first child that he would have been a first round pick.
Bro, after his freshman season, I was like, oh my gosh, like we found the next Andre Johnson.
Yeah,
Oh, that's so sad what happened.
Really... Yeah, we've had a lot of stuff like that in the last few years, man, because it happened to Malik Young as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really good, man. Our 2017 secondary, like, was loaded. And that's with Malik Young having a career-ending injury in, like, what was it, like, week four?
No, it wasn't that early. Because I remember he played in the – he got a pick in the Notre Dame game.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was definitely before, like, the ACC championship game, I think.
I got you.
But, yeah, that 26 – so I was – maybe we could talk about this on the show. I was – and I know that you and I are kind of skeptical on the Canes defense this year, but I – actually, I'll bring it up when our guest comes on. But I was thinking about the 3 years that Manny Diaz was the defensive coordinator.
Uh-huh.
Like, it averaged out to his defense in those 3 years. They gave up 19.9 points per game and something like 340 yards per game. Did you know in this last year with Blake Baker as defensive coordinator – the Canes gave up 27 points a game and 406 yards per game.
It's not very good.
No, it's horrible.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show you, like, how good this defense was under Manny Diaz.
Yeah. So I actually – let's dig into that. But just before – so I'm trolling the internet right now, and I found a list of receiving yard stats for the season. So – surprisingly, the Canes have only had four seasons where a player went for over 1,000 yards receiving.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow.
And so number one was in 2013, Allen Hurns went for 1,162. And then in 2010, Leonard Hankerson went for 1,156. Eddie Brown in 1984 had 1,114. And then in 2002, Andre Johnson had 1,092 yards.
Wow.
Yep. Those are the only 1,000-yard seasons for a receiver in Miami history.
I mean, I guess that doesn't surprise me that much because we've never been a school that has been an air-it-out past school.
It's true. And so to put this in perspective – if Mike Harley gets exactly 900 yards, he would be seventh on the all-time single-season receiving list for Miami.
Well, and I think it goes to show you that, like, and no disrespect to Mike Harley, but if he's only 900 yards away from the all-time receiving yards list, like, that's...
Yep.
I don't, like, I mean, even, like, Michael Irvin, like, Andre Johnson, like, I don't even think they don't hold the record. I'm pretty sure it's Reggie Wayne.
It's Santana Moss is number one, and then Reggie Wayne, Michael Irvin, Lamar Thomas, and Stacy Coley round out the top five.
Wow.
I love seeing Stacy in there, man.
Stacy Coley.
Yep.
I just think about the 2016 FSU game.
Yeah. Dude, if he would have had so many injuries, he easily would have been fourth place. I mean, he was only like 60 yards behind Lamar Thomas.
Ugh, now I'm just thinking about that game. I'm getting angry.
Yeah.
That was probably the most excruciating loss I've ever experienced as a Canes fan.
Dude, Coley always showed up for the FSU game. Like, he that's really what I loved about him and respected about him so much is that, like, even when he was having, like, a mediocre stretch, dude, when it was FSU week, you knew he was going to pop.
Isn't that how it is with most, like, I guess we've beaten FSU 4 years. Has it been 4 years in a row?
Yes, it is
4 years now. I guess we have beaten them 4 years in a row, but, like, even before then, we would see guys, like, come out of nowhere for that game, but then disappear the rest of the season. But I guess we've beaten them 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy to think about.
That's how it should be, though. I mean, like, to me, that's one of the aspects of somebody who's like a true Cane, air quotes, is like a guy that shows up against the teams like Florida State.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, one thing before we get to our guest. I was listening to a Rivals podcast, and our guy Mike Farrell was co-hosting it, and they were talking about the five teams who could be the next Clemson, And his co-host said Miami, but Mike was not about it at all.
Yeah.
And but he also was talking about he was talking about Mario Cristobal, and he says that he probably won't be at Oregon for long, and he says if he had an opportunity to go to Miami, he would take it like that. Do you think that's true?
I have no idea, but I'm very interested, honestly. Like I know Cristobal is a very polarizing figure on Hurricanes Twitter. But I mean, the guy has gotten results, right? He's done what? Is it two or three seasons at Oregon, and he already has two Pac-12 championships?
Yeah, and didn't he win a Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
And Mike just didn't sound very confident in Manny turning around Miami.
I waver on that. You know, it's like clearly Manny is taking baby steps in the right direction. But I wonder how much substance there is, you know, because like he's done a good job of using the transfer portal to accumulate the most top end talent that we've had in a while. Right. But I do think that we've been lacking depth underneath that. You know, I mean, look at it. We're going to have two first-round picks this year, and then we're going to have Roche go in, you know, like the second or third round, fourth round maybe, and Brevin in that same range. Like, that's a lot of top-end talent. And then you have a quarterback like De'Arik King. I don't know, man. Like who knows? I think next year is going to be – not this upcoming season, but the 2022 season is really going to show the structural integrity of the program that Manny has been building. And right now, I'm very skeptical. I there's a lot that can change, so I don't want to like already give a prediction on what will happen in 2022. But I don't like the way that, like, the early forecasts are trending in a bad direction, in my opinion.
You know, I think it's really easy to say that after how last year ended. Mm-hmm. And I just so wish that it ended just on a different note. Like, we could have beaten Oklahoma State in the bowl game, or we could have not lost to UNC by 40 and given up 800 yards of offense.
Yeah.
It just left such a sour taste in the mouth of people that, I mean, like 20 minutes before the UNC game started, like we were one of the most improved teams in college football and, you know, this and that. And then once that game ended, it's like, oh my God, like we are back to square one. We haven't done anything.
Yeah, I agree, man. I'm very worried about the UNC game this year. I don't know, man. I think that's kind of going to set my tone for Manny going forward.
Oof. Yeah, I don't even want to think about that game, man. And I wonder who's going to be ranked higher heading into the season. I feel like it's going to be UNC just because of Mac Brown and Sam Howell. But when you think about it, like
it should be.
It should be, but honestly, in my opinion, Miami might have more all-around talent than UNC.
Yeah, I think on the offensive side of the ball.
They lost their running backs. They lost their best receivers. They lost their best linebacker. You know, Miami has a pretty solid secondary. You know, we have a really good tight end. We have a really good trio at running backs. We also have De'Arik King. We don't have a receiver, but...
Yeah, I think on the offensive side of the ball, we're more talented than them. But, dude, I think we're just, if you're going talent-wise, production-wise, you know, for this upcoming season, I think, like, top to bottom, our defense is fairly mediocre in terms of talent. And I'm not talking about, like, highly rated freshman recruits, you know. I'm talking about guys that are going to see the field next year and how they will perform. I think we're going to have a fairly mediocre defense.
You know, I wrote an article yesterday that I think that the Canes defense will be better this year.
Interesting.
I think you know, we'll ask our guest and see what his thoughts are about that. Is he ready?
Let me message him real quick and I'll patch him in.
Okay.
What's up, man?
What's up? What's up? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What's going on, brother?
Enjoying life and, things are going well. Things are going well for me. How about you guys?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Okay. So we are very excited to welcome on our old friend, Wholesome Holloway, who's live from one of the Dakotas.
North Dakota.
Out there in the wilderness. So what's going on, man?
Is that the better Dakota? I don't know.
Yes. And we're not just one. We're the Dakotas. And then the best one is North. South Dakota, I mean, they have the, what's the monument with the presidents on it? That's the only reason why people ever even go there.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, I've never been to either of those. You'd think that, like, living in Salt Lake, I would have, like, made the drive, but it's still, like, a 15-hour drive.
Yeah. I would wonder, man, because you're so, how do I say this, adventurous.
Yeah.
It's a different weird avenues. So I'm surprised you didn't swing by. And you're a Broward guy, so I think you would fit in really well here.
You know, I got a fun fact about North Dakota. The capital city is Bismarck, North Dakota, which is actually named after, when it was named, they named it after the like sitting chancellor of Germany, Otto von Bismarck. And it was like a slight to the American government. So that's kind of fun.
That is kind of fun.
Okay.
Yeah. Brother, I know that you're really busy with what you got going on right now, but Kane's spring practice has been underway for about a week and a half. Have you been able to, you know, read up on what's going on and what are your first impressions?
Absolutely. I like what I'm hearing. The only thing that I spoke about today and I do on my channel is I want it to be real. You know, whatever we're getting spewed, I need that to be factual. Towards the end here, it's early on. There's a lot of things being laid down. There's some injuries that are a little up and down, but we want to be able to get it to the point where, you know, our young men are being developed at a high level. They trust whatever's being given to them. They're putting in the hard work necessary to be elite, not just necessary to have a scholarship at the University of Miami, because that's what a lot of them have been doing up until this point. You know, if you only go to the weight room and do what Coach Feely and his staff ask you to do, you're only doing what's required to be here at Miami. We just talked about it a while ago, Marsh, a couple months ago when you were on there. I mean, Mike Harley talked about hard work for the first time staying out there using a jug machine. That's just what you do if you want to be an elite program. So you want to start creating these type of habits in your program on a day-to-day basis. That's something that every player does, whether they're scholarship or not. Every coach does, whether they're on field, whether they're QC, whether they're recruiting. And that's taking whatever you're doing and going to a whole different level and comparing yourself to the elites.
Well, I know we talked. It's funny. I think we talked right before the UNC game, which is kind of funny. We all know how that ended up, but I wanted to ask you, do you feel like this program is heading in that direction that you're describing, where, you know, players are going above and beyond and not just, you know, doing the, you know, the, shall we say, the bare minimum?
Based on what I described, I would have to say yes, because that's what I've been hearing that they are doing. So I do have to give them credit. This program is in a way better shape than what a lot of people want to give it credit for, me included. This program has faced some things over the last decade, whether it's scholarship reductions, whether it's the NCAA black cloud that turned out to be just a couple scholarships, and we self-imposed a couple bowl games. We've been through a lot, man, and I'm not here to make any excuses for the program, but we've been through a lot, so it's great to see the rebound, and hopefully the 2020s is way better than the 2010s had been to the University of Miami on the football field. And even off the football field, moving on to the NFL draft with a lot of our prospects. So I'm happy with what's going on mentally in the program, even to the point where we've infused over the last couple of seasons. Let's think about who we brought in this program and how it's worked out, or maybe even just changed the mindset. You bring in Hill from Virginia Tech. That's a young man that was basically able to walk in and say, this is not enough. This is why we've been beating y'all. This is what we do at Vautech. Now, he didn't turn out to be a great player, but if you listen to a couple of interviews back then, he was basically letting them know this is not good enough. You bring in KJ Osborne. He starts to get that ball rolling with what hard work and what extra work really is with the wide receivers. Now you do the same thing with Tyreek Stevenson at cornerback. You do the same thing at defensive end with Jalen Phillips. So you're starting to get influx of outside people who are not all from South Florida, who all don't have that South Florida mindset, who can let it be known there's different ways to skin the cat and y'all ain't doing it right. So yeah. I do like some of the things that I've heard.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the NFL draft, I do have a quick question for you. Is who do you think out of this current class that's going to be drafted, who do you think ends up as the best NFL player?
That's tough. Mainly because of the simple fact that the NFL is so important about where you get drafted and what type of schemes and systems you get put in. Because, I mean, you go, let's take, for example, Greg Rousseau. Greg is, he's really reshaped his body. And if he goes to a 3-4 team, they may force him to play the 4-eye. And so his stats won't be much because he's basically taking on blocks. But if he goes to a team that runs a 4-3 attack and he gets to rush the passer as a 4-3 DN, life may be a lot better for him. So, but to answer your question, I'm going to say Jalen Phillips.
Okay.
Jalen's quickness, his newfound love for the game after it being taken away from him, his focus, how he reshaped his body at Miami. Now you're going to add that with personal training and strength and conditioning at the NFL level. If he goes to a team that allows him to play 3-4 stand-up outside linebacker, he's going to eat. He's going to eat a lot.
Okay. How do you think Brevin Jordan does in the NFL? I think, you know, if his injury problems don't, you know, continue to plague him, I think he could carve out a nice career in the NFL. What do you think?
I'm a little bit more down on Brevin than a lot of people are. He did enough here at Miami, but he basically played right tackle. So I think we never really got a chance to see the absolute best. And if we did, it was him as a freshman. So I hope he goes somewhere like Tennessee or San Francisco where he could be that second tight end as opposed to having to be somebody's go-to number one tight end as a rookie. Mm-hmm. Even somewhere, and he can't go to a dysfunctional program. It's well-renowned. Brevin's a really good leader. He talks that talk, but he gets sidetracked and does a lot of blabbering out the mouth sideways, too. So if he goes to a program that's losing and they just let him do whatever he's going to do, I don't really know. And it mainly comes down to us getting shellacked by North Carolina. He has the game of his life, and he's on Twitter freaking talking about Florida losing to LSU. And that's a guy we listed as a leader on this team.
Yeah,
dude, I'm glad you brought up the Twitter thing because that's been a big problem with the Canes over the last few years. We had Brad Kaya on a few weeks ago, and he wasn't a social media guy when he was at Miami. He's not a big social media guy now. And you know, you work with a lot of student athletes. What are your thoughts on the players having social media and kind of the negative effects of that?
Marsh, I'm going to be honest with you, man. It's something you can't run away from. You cannot run away from. So what you have to do is engage with the young men and have them understand the power that they hold when you hit send on Twitter. You can either kickstart your career or kill it with in a split second. You know, you like something that's a little anti-Semitic. You like something that's racially undertoned. You like something that's likened to white supremacy. You like something that's against women. You got to be very careful with this. And also who you allow to follow you and who you follow. Because all of that gets intertwined in you. Yeah. Because you are the entity. You are the brand. So if you go out there and use that in a wrong way, it can get skewed all type of ways. And if you're talking about playing on Sundays, they dissect everything to find a reason why not to pick you. Their job isn't to pick and try to convince their GM that you're a good player. Their job is to convince their GM and their PR that you won't be a hassle for them over the next 4 to 5 years, or even longer if you're blessed to play that long in the National Football League. So social media is something you can't run away from. You can't. You got to be careful with the type. And this goes into recruiting now, because social media has been a part of our lives for a little over a decade now. So that means the recruits that we are recruiting right now have lived almost their entire life with Twitter, with Instagram, yeah, with all type of social medias. And you can go take a deep dive in who this prospect is, who this recruit is. So you need to know who you're bringing into your program before they put pen to paper and throw that U up. You'll know who they really are.
Yeah. Are you against the idea of like banning social media during the season?
Yes, because I think once you start, now you add something to it. It's kind of like cursing, for example. When you're younger and you're with your friends, it's like you used to curse like a sailor, man. But then there were those kids whose parents or uncles used to let them curse, and then it became not so much of a big deal to them. It's like, if you want to use those terms, you use them. Understand what you're saying and understand what you mean when you say certain things, and be careful with it out of respect around us. When it comes to social media, it's like, if I tell you, if I force you, no, you can't do that, that's only going to make certain players rebel. That's only going to make certain players want to do it more. So yeah, just give them the information and understand what they're doing and the power that they have. I think that is what the key is. I remember Miami, I think it was Coach Diaz's first year, they had a guy come in and speak to them about the importance of branding and the importance of social media, good and bad. That's huge. That's what you have to do. Because you can't force it the opposite way, especially when you got coaches in the Miami Hurricanes football program and all these other programs on Twitter every single day. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I respect that.
That's a very, very good point. I mean, our head coach was tweeting all the time his first year. But that's beside the point. Let's get back to Green Tree. I have a few questions. So someone on State of the U wrote an article today. It wasn't me, but I want to ask you about it. It says, does Manny Diaz have a seniority problem at Miami? Okay, absolutely. So talk a little bit about that.
1,000% he has a seniority problem. Oh, I messed that program up.
Hey, I couldn't agree more with you. I'm glad you agree. Talk a little bit about that.
Scott Patchen over Gregory Rousseau? Are you crazy?
that doesn't
make any sense. But he did it.
Hey,
okay, now linebacker, we've under-recruited, underdeveloped linebacker since Denzel Perryman graduated. So I can't blame that on any specific seniority. Wide receiver, the 2020 season?
Yep.
And Marsh, you know I'm a sixth guy for life. I love him. Okay? But I give you one game in specific. If you bench Pope and Wiggins at halftime, Miami wins against Oklahoma State by 14.
You might be,
because Keyshawn is not dropping that. Restrepo, I don't know if he was healthy or not, because I know they had COVID issues with the younger guys at one point. I don't even know if he was at that game. But you pull them off and you put them on the bench, with both of them having 6 drop passes in that game alone, get them out. Get them out. Miami goes on this long run, fighting back in the game, and it comes down to these dudes that can't freaking catch the football. Why are they still on the football field? Seniority.
Do you think Mark Pope has a starting spot when we open against Alabama?
No.
Yeah.
No, you don't think he's starting?
No, unfortunately, and I'm not here to give up on young men, but eventually, now that you have a whole spring, you also will be going into a training camp. I think it'll be more of, he'll go to the slot maybe, but if he does start, it'll be in the slot. It won't be a starting wide receiver at the University of Miami anymore.
Okay. So if he starts at the slot, where do you put Harley?
That's why I said, if he starts for Miami, read between the lines of what I'm saying. If he starts at Miami, it would have to be in the slot.
So my starting receivers right now, it's Charleston Rambo, Mike Harley, and then I'm torn between – I want to say Keyshawn Smith. I really do, but I feel like Mark Pope is going to start. Who would your three be?
Keyshawn as our X.
Mm-hmm.
Harley in the slot and Rambo on the outside and on the other. Now, the fourth slot, if we were to go two slot, I think that'll be Pope. If it's fair, that'll be Restrepo and it won't be a question.
Yeah.
If it's fair. But I don't know if Coach Diaz has completely got the seniority out of his system. I don't know.
I would you expound on that? Because, you know, you're like trying to get into coaching, right? So help us to understand what would possess Coach Diaz to do things like that, to push the seniority narrative, because it seems so illogical to me and probably everyone else.
So what happens a lot when you sit in these meetings and you have these conversations, trust is such a huge factor. And trust comes from a buildup of a lot of different stuff, guys, a lot of different stuff. There's weekly tests. There's these walkthroughs that you go through. I mean, you have your offensive test, your defensive test. A head coach may walk in and say, hey, Coach so-and-so just implemented this blitz. I want you to stand up and write down this whole blitz. And that'll even go into your plus and minus for that week. Okay, grading systems go all different type of ways. Like Coach Diaz talks about with morning weights and going to class and that star system. That stuff plays a role in a lot of things. And when you have a coach who really relies on experience, really relies on people who buy into his system, really relies on people who he can trust, all that screams older players. It doesn't scream the best player, because the best player might be a true freshman who's 18 years old, but coach doesn't know if he can trust him just yet because he doesn't know the entire playbook. I mean, have you heard of Avery Huff, or is he off the roster? Okay.
Yeah.
These are the type of things I'm talking about that happen in programs every single year. There's a young man who's way better, way faster, way quicker. But just because he doesn't know that coach wants us to have this check on third down when it comes to this 2x2 set on this down and distance on this side of the field at this time of the game, then he doesn't start. Or he doesn't contribute as much as he should because he doesn't check off the marks that coaches want. That stuff happens way too often. I'm telling you, too often.
A lot of little
intricacies happen in these meeting rooms that don't translate to true football that get put into why a player is in a certain spot on the depth chart.
I feel like Alabama plays a lot more younger guys than most blue chip programs, and I don't know why people aren't thinking about that. You know, I don't know why other coaches don't look around and be like, well, you know, why is Alabama starting more freshmen than we are?
Well, that's a two-tone answer. The first one I would say, they have the best coaches mixed with the best players.
Yeah.
So obviously this young man is probably already, he walks in as a freshman, he's a third-round pick at worst. By the time he leaves, he either creeps to the fourth or he's a first-rounder. Okay, that's number one. So you got the best players and the best coaches. Number two, they have such an elite turnover. That's why they have to play so many young players. It's because they lose 20-some-odd guys to the top 75 picks in the NFL draft every year.
Yeah.
So that's why they train their freshmen so much, because they know you're not going to touch the field year three, year four. You're probably going to touch the field here a little bit late in year one. You're going to contribute in year two, and you're going to start in year three because the guys ahead of you have already departed. I mean, redshirting is null and void anymore. So these young men, that's why you're seeing more true juniors enter the NFL draft, more redshirt sophomores enter the NFL draft. Because they're getting prepared at the highest level. At 20, they're ready to hit the NFL. And the NFL loves that, because now I get to give you a 5-year contract instead of a 4-year contract and spread that money a little further.
Okay, so I have a question. It was about an article I wrote yesterday. I know there's been a lot of talk about the Canes defense and how poorly, you know, we ended last year on. And but I think that this defense is going to be improved for a number of reasons. Manny Diaz calling the defense again. Bob Shoup as an analyst. I love the hire of T-Rob. What are your thoughts on the defense as a whole? Do you think that we will see improvement on that end because of these guys?
My simple answer to that, Marsh, is hell yeah. Obviously, I think there's going to be a huge influx because of the simple fact that now you're going to get different ways to skin a cat and a lot more experience in the in those meetings rooms. Now, let's take, for example, look at Tyrique Stevenson. He gives up that play versus Harley, right? You guys know the highlight I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
When was the last time you seen a Miami Hurricanes corner look and attack the football? Although he missed it, and it turned out to be a catch, a touchdown catch by Harley. When was the last time you seen one of our corners go up and attack a freaking football at the highest point like that?
It's been a minute.
Try.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
I mean, Mike Jackson tried it, and it didn't always work out for him.
Yeah.
But it was the best technique. It's the most modern. It's what matters right now. You got to get the freaking football. PBUs don't get you drafted. Interceptions do. The only way to get interceptions is go at the football. Unless you're in trail technique, then you get what Coach Efren Bandon was trying to teach and force Coach Mike Rump to teach was the eyes and hands. That happens when you're in trail technique because you're already beat. Because now you're taking a chance going after the football and you're going to give up a touchdown, as opposed to you swatting and raking out a hand when someone's already caught the ball.
Yeah.
All right. But the rest of that defense, I can see it taking some big jumps up. The linebacker will still always be a question for me.
Yeah.
Mainly because who's still coaching them?
Yeah.
It's Diaz.
Yep. And Coach Packy, he's going to be helping him out on that as well.
Now, I really like Coach Packy. I'm one of those people that give him his flowers while he's still here. Because that's a young man 5-10 years from now. I promise you he's a pretty big-time DC.
Interesting.
Remember I said that.
Okay.
His intricacies, he's such a good person, too. Recruits love him. He's pretty good, man. He's pretty good. Look at our special teams and look at how Stryker has played over the last 2 years. Are there many complaints you could say?
No, I mean, that's a fair point, man. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different narratives you could push. You know, some people... myself included, at various points have pushed the fact that, you know, he received finished products from the transfer portal as far as special teams. But, I mean, you're right. I'm also a guy who's predicting Gilbert Frierson to be the best player on our defense next year.
Come on, somebody, you preaching now. But that goes more to my point. That's also featuring Packy. He was their coach. He only had two or three guys. If you add Avery Huff, that's the third one, who's been swinging back and forth between striker and linebacker because he can't put on weight.
Yep.
And to me, we can't keep forcing players to put on weight super fast. Everyone's genetics are a little different. Yeah. Right, it's going to take him some time. It's year three. He's pushing 220. We don't need him to be 235 year three already. Let's give him some time. Anyway.
No,
special teams, he's split between a couple GAs and assistant coaches.
Were you surprised that Packy switch to coaching linebackers because he had been doing such a good job at strikers with Romeo and then Gilbert?
No. Here's why. Because strikers are a part of both coverage and run fits, which is exactly what weak side and strong side linebackers are. Okay, so he basically was coaching strong side linebacker. Now he's just going to be coaching both weak side and middle. So hopefully that means we're going to get some pretty good coverage out of these guys. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Do you think that this is finally the year we see Sam Brooks break out at linebacker? Because I'm very, very big on Sam Brooks. I have been since he came out of Northwestern. Do you feel, I mean, I know he switched to linebacker because I know he kind of played more kind of an edge rusher in high school. What are your thoughts on him?
I really like Sam Brooks, and I think we're doing him such a disservice He's what, 2 inches shorter than Chance Williams? All right. I mean, well, he's probably the same height, if not an inch shorter than Trent Harris. You know what I'm saying? He's maybe an inch or so, or maybe an inch to half inch shorter than Olivier Vernon. But all of them get to play DN, and he's forced to play linebacker. I think he's a stand-up edge rusher who we are playing out of position because we've been so inadequate at recruiting linebacker that a DN can come here and be the best linebacker on the team.
Yeah.
Now, is that's speaking about him and this program.
Yeah.
To the point where you see a guy like Corey Flagg Jr. is one of the only true linebackers on the freaking roster.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And look at how well he played.
Yeah, and he immediately – yeah, he immediately separated himself as a 19-year-old.
That doesn't even make sense. That should not be a thing.
Agreed.
Because we had 56, 55, and 53, we stopped recruiting big time. You bring in a project player like BJ Jennings. You bring in a so-so player like Wayman Steed. Instead of going after some big dogs, who was in direct correlation with that? Manny Diaz.
Yeah.
So that's why I keep saying linebacker will forever be a question mark for me, because he has had his hand on that since 2016, yeah. And it has been one of the worst positions in college football.
Yeah, and you know, with that, just another side note is that, you know, when Manny got here, all him and Mark Richt had to do was just like reassure the commitment of Pinckney, Quarterman, and Zach McLeod, because they were all committed and very interested under Al Golden as well. So, you know, it's hard to even call them Manny Diaz recruits, really. And, you know, those are undoubtedly the best guys that have played under Manny at linebacker, and, you know, we saw how that went there last year.
And if we're being honest, they were brought here to play in that Mark D'Onofrio 34.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shaq was going to be the middle in the 3-4. Pinckney was going to be the weak side in the 3-4. McLeod was going to be the strong side outside linebacker in the 3-4. People forget that.
McLeod.
That's why him transitioning to DN is going to be the best thing that happened to him in his career.
Yeah.
That's what he was going to be brought here to do, is to cover alley flats and rush the passer.
I was just going to say, man, like, Zach McLeod's career would have gone a lot differently if he would have come here to play in a 3-4 defense.
Now, I'm definitely not for the 3-4 at Miami anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I like the 34. I played in it. The 3-4 can be ultra aggressive.
Yeah.
But the way that D'Onofrio was coaching it, it's not. Because, I mean, you turn on Alabama, they're a 3-4 nickel team. You turn on Georgia, they are 3-4 nickel team. Auburn, 3-4 nickel team. Ohio State, 3-4 nickel team.
Yeah, I think it's funny that everyone always disses on the 3-4, and I'm like, that's what Saban's been running at Alabama since the day he got there. I don't know. It's kind of it's kind of funny. I know you're a lineman guy. A lot of people are worried about this defensive line because we lose Jalen Phillips, Quincy Roche. I guess you could throw Greg Rousseau in there. But I am so excited, and I love Coach Todd Stroud. I think he's one of the good men to be coaching at this university in a long time. And he's still involved with the program very much so. But I love that Jess Simpson is back coaching at Miami, because I saw what his 2018 defensive line did, and it was outstanding what he did with Joe Jackson, Jonathan Garvin, Gerald Willis. Do you think that we could see that same kind of production from this line with guys like Nesta Silvera, Jafari Harvey, Zach McLeod, and DeAndre Johnson?
I think it could be even better as a collective unit. I've spoken – I don't know Coach Tal Stroud. I know the players love him. I know he's renowned as a person. But at the end of the day, we're talking football. And the D-line made a huge regression as a unit under Coach Tal Stroud. Take it how you want. I that's just facts. I don't really care. That's just the truth. Okay. Our young men were not working moves. Our young men were not being prepared. Our young men were not aggressive. Our young men were not disengaging. All of that type of stuff will be changed under Coach Simpson. You will not touch his football field if you cannot disengage from a guard. You will not touch his football field if on third down, all you're doing is bull rushing. That stuff is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And you can hear the inflection in my voice because you're talking about a position that is personal for me as a player and a coach. And that has been the most underwhelming crap I've seen in the last 2 years under the recent defensive line coach. If we're talking ball strictly, like I say, I'm not attacking him as a person. I don't know him as a person. But his production on that freaking defensive line has been unacceptable at the University of Miami on every level. Unacceptable.
All right. Okay.
I do think that Coach Simpson is going to change everything about this crap I've seen at defensive line at the University of Miami. He's going to change it. Okay? Us backdooring plays. And then, so you got linebackers who fill gaps. And then you have D linemen who backdoor plays. No, that doesn't work. That doesn't make any logical sense. Okay? So you got the two people who are responsible for that crap out of this program. That's Blake Baker and Coach Todd Stroud as on-field coach. Okay, so the D-line is going to play completely different. Now, I'm not saying they're going to go out there and have 37 sacks as a D-line, period. I would love that. But just from the philosophy of how they're going to play, it's going to be completely different.
Okay. So if you ask me right now, my starting four on the D-line would – I change this a lot, but after hearing, you know, what I've heard, you know, being in the Skype interviews with the players and coaches, this would be my starting four. It would be Jafari Harvey, Nesta, Jared Harrison Hunt, and Zach McLeod. Would you agree with that?
And where are they at? Strong side, weak side, three technique, two eye. Talk to me. What's going on here?
Well, you tell me. I don't know. The X's and O's, that's your thing, man.
Okay. So based on the line you just gave me, you would have to have Jafari Harvey on the weak side and Zach McLeod on the strong side. Number one, Jafari Harvey is a little bit more of a pass rusher than he is a balanced player. He can stop the run. I'm not saying he can't. But for what he does best, you want him on the weak side where he doesn't really have to worry about the run. He can just get after the QB. Zach McLeod, I don't know him as a DN, what he can work. I know that he's pretty stout against the run coming downhill, so you would want that on your strong side. Now, you got Nesta and Harrison Hunt. You got two pass rushers in at D-tackle. Who's stopping the run, Marsh?
I don't know.
Who's going to get double-teamed by a guard, be able to anchor, and not get blown back to our small linebackers? Please tell me.
So are you saying we don't have that guy?
What I'm saying is that's either going to have to be 96 or 91. Either one of them is going to have to wake up and show me something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, if you're talking about a third down D line, that's pretty good. But yeah. You got Nesta, who's balanced. You have Harrison Hunt, who's a little bit more pass rush than he is run stop. So he's technically balanced, but he leans pass rush. What happens when you go up against guards who are just going to double team and blow you up?
So you say put Harrison Hunt in passing situations.
Yes. For me, my starting D line, I would keep those same DNs because I think seniority is going to have McLeod start over Johnson, who I think Johnson is way better. But they're going to start McLeod. He's yep. One of Manny's guys. So they're going to keep milking him until he's done. So you're going to have Zach McLeod on the strong side, Harvey on the weak side. Give me Nesta Silvera as a three technique and give me John Ford as a two eye.
Okay. All right. Do you think as the season progresses, we could see possibly Leonard Taylor get some snaps?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, he's already pushing like 305, 306. Last time I looked into one of his tweets, he talked about how much weight he's gained. He's going to have something to say. And the thing about college ball at the highest level, it's not really about starts anymore. It's about snap count and situational ball. And that's the same. You can say that about every single position, excluding O-line. Unless you put you got a marquee freshman, you put him in at tight end on goal line and just help move people. That helps.
Yeah.
Or TD, you need one guy. But you saw last year with the running back. You can use all three and be successful. Okay. I wish we had that mentality at wide receiver because we would have had a way better outcome to the season if we used people all over instead of just forcing three or four on the field because they're the older guys. When it comes to D-line, shoot, you keep everybody's snap count under 20. You're keeping everybody healthy. You're rotating. You got a NASCAR, which is your third down D-line. You got your starting front. You got your run stop in front. You have your balanced fronts. Oh, man. you match up, like, let's say, for example, this Pitt. Let's say we're playing Pitt, and Pittsburgh has this really weak right guard in pass blocking. So you make sure that week you start Nesta at the 2-eye, you bring in a Harrison Hunt or a Leonard Taylor at 3 technique, because they're going to eat this guy's lunch all day on passing downs. That's the type of foresight I wasn't seeing the last 2 years that I know I will see under a pro D-line coach and Coach Simpson.
Okay. Well, Wholesome, so I want to talk about O-line now.
Oh, and I love it. Hit me.
Okay. So there's a lot of rhetoric around the idea that, you know, we returned every offensive lineman. We should have, you know, this should be a strength for our team. Now, we've talked enough that you kind of know how I am, right? Like, I'm always someone who I see the way that everyone's cutting it, and I try to take a cut in a different direction, right? And so what I would like you to try to talk me off the edge if that's your opinion. But, you know, 2 years ago, 2019, we have most of the same personnel, and we are in the 110s, 120s as far as rankings for an offensive line. We change coaches. We all, you know, everyone matures another year. Last year, we're in the 90s still. So I am hesitant. I think there will be considerable improvement, but there is a lot of room for considerable improvement when you are 90th. So I am predicting, you know, relative to those rankings, I'm predicting a fairly mediocre offensive line next year. So I'm thinking like 50s to 60s.
I agree.
Okay. So you're not on board of the, you know, just because they're all seniors, we're going to have a great offensive line.
No, let me ask you a question. I'll pose this question to you. You know, the grading scale in South Florida, do you know it by any chance? It's a little different than every other grading scale.
Nope.
Okay. So 0 to 59 is an F in South Florida. I've been around other places, so I know that the grading scale is a little different. Okay, then you go from 60 to 69 is a D, 70 to 79 is a C, okay, and so on and so mm-hmm. on. 80 to 89 is a B, mm-hmm. and 90 up is an A. Right. Let's say, for example, you are a 47F, right? And you work your behind off, and you climb all the way up to a 60D.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still great?
No.
But you spent all this time, you know the system, you know the class, you're doing really well, you worked really hard. You climb from a super F to basically an F plus D minus.
I get you. I get where you're going.
Okay. So this offensive line is going to have an influx of Navon Donaldson, which we all know, if all reports are to be true, he's really taking a step forward. We know for a fact he's going to be a huge influx in the run game. I mean, as much as I love DJ Scaife, you got DJ Scaife moving people or Navon Donaldson moving people? Who do you think is going to move someone a little further?
Navon.
Yeah. At right tackle, now you're going to have a little fire under Jerry Williams behind, because he was a guy who just made sure his player didn't make the play. He didn't plan anybody. He didn't move anybody. He didn't pick anybody up and move them to the outside linebacker. Now, I'm not saying you got to be blindside and Michael Oren drive somebody to the bus, but our O-line doesn't put people in the dirt. They just get in the way.
So do you think this is that like our deficiencies at offensive line? Do you think that's more coaching or just lack of talent?
Marsh, that's a tough question, because I think balance is super important in life, and it's going to be a little bit of both on both sides of that argument. Okay, here's why I say that. You take, let's take a guy like Cleveland Reed, right? How is it that this guy goes from being a 4-star, and I believe he was a top 15 in his position in the country, and now he can't even crack any PT on a 90th ranked O-line in the country?
Suspicious.
Or you bring in a guy like Jakai Clark, who is obviously the best center on the team. No questions asked. But because you have a team favorite, and he's given a lot to the pro. He's a program guy. Oh, yeah, we love him. Now you got Jakai, who has to play guard because this other guy has been here for 8 years. You know, a lot of this is what I'm talking about. Like I said in my soliloquy early on in the recording, there's a lot of little intricacies, little politics, little favoritism that happens in every program. It's not just at Miami, so I'm not saying that. It's a lot of that little crap that keeps happening and stays in a program. Now, I'm not saying you're supposed to just kick young men to the side, pull his scholarship, and fire that guy, and F this dude. No, that's not what I'm saying. But if we want to fight against the seniority, and it's blatantly obvious that some other players are being moved because you want to see them on the field, I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
I've never thought of the center situation like that. And then I went back and watched some offensive line film the other day and looked at 65, and you may have a point.
Yeah.
You may have a point.
Well, so my final question for the interview for you, Wholesome, is I want to hear your thoughts about our projected improvement against the schedule that we have slated next year. You know, right now, if I had to predict what will be, I'm going to guess 2 losses. I don't necessarily think we get it done versus North Carolina, but I would love to hear your take on this.
Well, we know 1 loss.
Yeah, right.
That first game of the season won't even be close. And I don't care how much they've lost. It's true they have lost a lot, but the programs are just on 2 different stratospheres.
It'd be like the 1980 U.S. men's hockey team, you know?
Would you say?
Yeah.
I just said it would be an epic upset if we win.
Well, that's not happening, so yeah. Let's just keep that. Let's not do that to our hearts.
I refuse to do it. So you're in safe
Florida
place here.
Again. Like people were saying, oh well, you predicted us to beat Florida, but we can't beat Bama. It's like, bro,
Florida can't beat Bama those either.
Those programs are on the like Florida isn't even sniffing Alabama. Like they're on such another planet right now that it's foolish to do this to your hearts.
Yeah,
it is. And what also hurts is the fact that. And I'm going to get back to your question, but coaches put a lot of stuff on film, right? But here's the thing. You got to be able to do what that other team did to be successful against them. Ole Miss put it on film how you could have a chance to beat Bama. The only other team that had the personnel to do that exact same thing or close to was Florida. And arguably, they had the best game of the season. Bama, Florida in the SEC championship game was the best. You had even though both teams gave up yards, you still had really good defense at times. You had good schematics. You had good X's and O's. You had really good coaches. And you had a lot of talent on the football field at the same time. Florida gave Bama its best game. Yep. So they are closer than you would think. But they were able to replicate what Ole Miss did to them. And this is why I think Coach Shoup is such a big thing is – he will be able to sit and analyze that film and say, Coach, Virginia gave us the formula to have a close game with Clemson. But no, we want to come out and run power eye against them to prove a point about how bad we are and how manly we are. We're going to run right at them. When Virginia took these people to a good game because they attacked their sorry corners and safeties and coverage. Okay, when are we going to get out of our own way with certain things? Is why I say Miami will continue to be 3 losses, maybe 4, until we learn to be able to get out of our own way with a lot of crap. Okay, check the ego and handle business week to week. Mm-hmm. Last week has nothing to do with this week. Next week has nothing to do with this week. Focus in on what we're going to do to embarrass these people in front of us. We talked about it before when I was on here, like 6 months ago. I hate and still hate a win's a win. If you are not dominating, if you are not in the business to dominate, then what are you doing it for? If you're preaching just find a way to win, please get another profession. Go sell cars or iPads for a living. Because just hitting your quota means you get that raise this month. But when you're dealing with the lives of young men who want to play at the next level, when you're dealing with the lives of other coaches, and this is how they feed their family, dominating and winning and embarrassing people is what you are there to do. Not just figure out a way to have one more point than a sorry Virginia Tech team. Five more points than a horrific UVA team. No. Mm-mm. And I'm definitely not slipping and sliding after beating them and twerking in the dang locker room.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Oh, you know. Man, we could have ended this on a good note. Then you brought up that childish memory.
I mean, like I told you, Marsha, I got, unless y'all got another guest, I got a little time on my hands. If you got any more questions to hit me with, I'd love to talk. I'll talk all day long.
Well, okay, so we got to get going, but we always love talking to you, man. So let's do this again next time you're free. How does that sound?
Yes.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've been trying to get in touch. You know, Marsh is, he's so Hollywood now. He doesn't get his way back up, man. He don't reply to my messages. It's okay.
The only Hollywood part about me is that I live in actual Hollywood. Other than that, come on, man. Come on.
Hey. We'll get you on again soon, man. I got something that's pushing up against this interview, but I was texting this to Marsh while you were talking, and I mean this in the kindest and best way possible, is that I feel like I'm at church right now, like receiving my football inspiration from you, because I love the way that you talk about this stuff, man.
I truly appreciate that, man. I hope you don't get too many thumbs down or negative, because the fan base has a love and slightly hate relationship with my approach, because when you're a realist, you don't tell them what they want to hear, and you kind of jab in that wound that's been sewed over for the last 30 years and the last 20 years since 2001. And I'm sorry, not sorry. It's a lot of stuff that I'm willing to say that other people aren't, and I'm willing to stand on that. And I just hope that things change. I want the absolute best. I don't want us to lose 3-4 games with this subpar behind schedule. Yep. But I know that until proven otherwise, we're going to lose the two best games on our schedule. We're going to have that stupid Miami loss that's always in there. And there's a toss-up of where it's going to be one close game that shouldn't be close, that could be either win or lose. So that's the way I say somewhere 3-4.
You're preaching to the choir. You know who you're talking to, man? People ride me all day long on social media because I'm a realist.
They love you, Marsh. They love you.
Because I think that they finally understand that I'm not going to, you know, lie to them about this team. I have to be honest, man. I'm not going to satisfy the needs of fans that grew up in the glory days and expect that every year.
Yes, so. Absolutely. Now, one thing I will say, can you please get off of Cam Harris?
What do you mean?
Can he go through a drill without you jabbing at him? You didn't even respond, so you knew you were in the wrong. You knew it. He's like, I'm not even gonna go at it with this guy today. This man, Marsh, talking about. Is it me or is Knighton going through still better? You got people.
I agree, Marsh.
Cam Harris's effort because he was going through a drill different from a scat back who's 20 pounds lighter than him.
Okay. Marsh, I agree. You need to let Cam Harris meander through drills
No, Wholesome. I understand what you're saying. I Cam and Jalen are two different backs. I get that now. First glance, I was like, oh, isn't that interesting?
And see, the funny part is you got people thinking that he was jogging through the drill. he's a balanced back. He you know, he's Mark Ingram.
Well, and, not then he, Chris and then he tweeted, and then he tweeted about it. Then he tweeted about it. He says, "Y'all think I'm slow, huh?"
You have to understand. This is why I'm careful with what I tweet. You have to understand your stage. And when you put out certain narratives, my brother, you got to be careful because people take what you say and run with it.
I know. I'm starting to realize that. And no, you're right. You're right. So
but I still
know.
Love you. I mean, everything I say with no disrespect, especially on your platform for allowing me to be on. I just want people to know when you have YouTube channels, State of the U articles, whatever, we have to be careful. Now, speaking the truth is just speaking the truth. But putting certain narratives out there can really be harmful to young men who are trying to become pros. Remember, we're still talking about young men.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, man. That's a good point. That's why you're my boy, man. Because you and I think the same about football, but you're just a lot smarter than me and a lot wiser.
It's been years of study, man. Trust me, I go to facilities every day where I feel like the dumbest dude in the room. But I'm sitting there with coaches who've been doing it for 2-3 decades before I was even born. So, but thank you all so very much for the opportunity to be here and give my voice out to the people who listen, man. Hopefully, y'all don't hate me too much. I'm just a realist about certain things. In D-line, I get really personal. Because I hate what I've been watching for the last couple of years, and that's just how it is.
Hey, well, you're on the right show to be a realist, man, and we appreciate you a ton, and thank you so much for coming on, and we'll do this again soon.
We'll have you on again soon, man. Hope everything's well.
All right, much love.
Okay, thank you.
Much love, bro.
All right, that was awesome, man. As always,
I love that guy.
Same, man. It's you know what I mean? I feel like I said, I got my spiritual football nutrition.
Just feels barely. Good to pull out every now and again.
Yeah.
Well, good. Yeah, we gotta have him on again soon. But I know you are you're pressed for time, so we'll end this episode. We will get to Mount Marshmore. Next episode, hopefully we're gonna try and do an episode on Friday after the Jacoby Brown announcement. But anything else, Jordan?
Nope, that's it, man. Just I have that's the great thing about having a air quotes platform/podcast is I just wanted to ask you one quick NBA question, Marsh. Indulge me for a moment. Did you know that the center for the Utah Jazz, Rudy Gobert?
Oh boy.
Is number one all time in NBA history in offensive rating.
I did not.
Isn't that mind blowing?
That is quite interesting.
Yeah, I know. Well, I just had to throw that out there for all the people that think Rudy's not good at offense. You know, and I'm not a guy that thinks that one stat defines an argument, right? So I'm not going to say that he's like the greatest offensive player even in the NBA currently, but yeah, the guy's good.
Yeah,
MVP love, man.
Get that? Yeah, I love how you put that in right at the end.
MVP love. Yeah, I had to. I meant to do it earlier and I forgot. But you know what? This is why I do what I do, is so I can project my, as some people call it, horrible sports takes and just cram it down people's throat unwillingly. So
perfect. Okay. Well, thank you so much to Wholesome. And we will talk to you guys in a couple of days. Until that, go Canes!
Go Canes!
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like and leave a comment to help our podcast grow. Follow me on Twitter.